It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Eli Murray grew up in rural Illinois, attended Sauk Valley Community College, and in 2015 earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Soon after, he joined the Tampa Bay Times. Then, this year, Eli and his fellow TBT investigative reporters Corey Johnson and Rebecca Willington were awarded the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting. It was for a six-part series called Poisoned, and it revealed severe lead poisoning among hundreds of workers at Gopher Resource in Tampa. That's a facility that extracts lead from used car batteries, melts and molds it into metal blocks stamped with the company's logo, and resells it for profit. Eli will be on the campus of the University of Illinois tonight, Tuesday, for a Q&A session with Associate Professor of Journalism Charles Stretch Ledford. You can join via Zoom or attend in person at the Monsanto Multimedia Studio in Urbana from 6 to 7 p.m. You can find out more about that on our website, 21stshow.org. I'll repeat that again later, but for now, Eli, welcome to the 21st Show and welcome back to campus. Thanks for joining us in studio.
Hello, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So listeners, just so you know, in order to make our schedules meet, we tape this conversation. We won't be taking any calls, but you're always welcome to let us know what you think on Twitter at 21st Show, or just send us an email, talk@21stshow.org. All right, so Eli, I want to begin. You were graduated from the University of Illinois in 2015, as I said, about 7 years ago. How's it feel to be back on campus?
It's pretty great to be back on campus. I'm excited to spend some more time walking around campus and see everything that's changed.
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about your background in journalism. There are people who grew up with, you know, they knew this is what they always wanted to do. I myself am not one of those people. I came to this, actually, I've majored in something else at college. But where are you on that spectrum?
I had a high school teacher who sort of set me on the path of pursuing journalism. And as you mentioned, I went to Sauk Valley Community College. I wasn't certain exactly what I wanted to do after high school, but I had sort of been influenced enough by this teacher that I thought, you know, when I went to U of I, I would give journalism a shot.
And what was that like at U of I at the time? I mean, this is a time, it was only 7 years ago, but it's already a time of transition, certainly from print to digital. What did you do? What was your undergraduate time like in journalism?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time sort of pursuing web development and sort of coding side of things while I was here. I was a self-taught programmer, but I taught myself how to code, and I kept seeing ways to apply it to journalism in the way that we scrape and access information, or the way we make sense of it and then visualize it. And so I spent a lot of time studying those sorts of things, and I even took a few elective courses focusing on those topics.
Ah, yes, computer science. I had a friend who majored in computer science at the University of Illinois, and other people I didn't know who went on to co-found PayPal from back when I was at the university. And I do wonder about the life choices that those of us in journalism made. It seems like, to talk about that, so you said you were a self-taught programmer. What drew you to the data side of journalism?
To me, the numbers and the documents and the records have always been really important part of telling the story, because that's sort of how you can support a lot of what you're talking about in a story. And so when I got to the University of Illinois, I was taking a news design course, and part of it was print design, and there was a short segment on web design. And when I started to do HTML and CSS in class, I really enjoyed it, putting those together. And so that summer I went and got a couple, textbooks on JavaScript and taught myself to code.
So, okay, you graduate in 2015. This is as I mentioned earlier, a time of real sort of wrenching transition for the news industry. Had people tried to wave you off of journalism at all?
I would say that the reality of the journalism field has always been, no one's been covering that up or sort of hiding it, but I wouldn't say that anyone has sort of tried to steer me away from it. You have to have realistic expectations getting into journalism on what the work is going to be and what it requires you to do every day.
Yeah. All right. So how do you end up at the Tampa Bay Times?
So when I graduated in 2015, I had actually was lucky enough to get an internship at the Tampa Bay Times. And so I headed down there in the summer of 2015, and I was an intern on the data team, which at the time was embedded on the investigations team, led by editor Chris Davis. And then my editor, Adam Playford, hired me on as an intern, and I was there for 3 months, and then they extended me another 6 months or so. And I had an investigation published in that time, a story that I had worked on with some other colleagues. And after that published, they brought me on full time.
All right. I want to talk a little bit more about the Tampa Bay Times, because I think it's a fairly unique publication in the realm of what news organizations are doing today. But we need to take a break. We're going to continue with Eli Murray, who's an investigative reporter at the Tampa Bay Times, a Pulitzer Prize winner this year with a couple of his colleagues for a series on lead poisoning among hundreds of workers at a business in Tampa. We have to take a break. We'll continue in a moment. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Eli Murray, an investigative reporter at the Tampa Bay Times, but more relevant to us, he is from Illinois. He grew up in Northern Illinois, went to Sauk Valley Community College, and then earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. This year, he and two colleagues, Corey Johnson and Rebecca Woolington, won the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting for a series called Poisoned. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But Eli, before the break, we were talking about the Tampa Bay Times. Maybe for some of our listeners who are not familiar, you know, there's been a lot of corporate consolidation in the news industry. Talk about the ownership of the Tampa Bay Times and you know, what difference that might make in terms of the ability to do the kind of investigative work you and your colleagues do there.
The Tampa Bay Times has a pretty unique ownership structure. They're owned by Poynter, the Poynter Institute, which is a nonprofit journalism education institution. And so as being owned by Poynter, you know, there's a strong emphasis on journalism and storytelling and story crafting.
It doesn't have as much of a commercial imperative as some of the other media out there, right?
Yeah, we've been the leadership at the Times has been playing with some funding models, including donation funding recently, and we've seen some success with that. But largely, most of our revenue comes from, as I understand it, subscriptions.
Okay, let's get into the story that won you and your colleagues the Pulitzer Prize. It was called Poisoned. How did that investigation begin for you?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we won the Pulitzer Prize with my colleagues, Corey Johnson and Rebecca Woolington. And Corey and I had been working, this was maybe 3 years ago, we had started working on a series of stories about lead in the drinking water at the schools in Tampa. And while we were looking into that, the school district was testing the fountains and finding some level of lead in it. But while we were looking into that, a source sent us a report called Florida's Annual Morbidity Statistics. And the source had earmarked a page inside of it. And that page was the lead poisoning page. And on that page, the numbers for Hillsborough County, which is the county that Tampa is in, were off the charts. They were much higher than any of the numbers anywhere else in the state as far as lead poisonings go. Particularly adult lead poisonings. And then this is talking in raw numbers, but even in per capita, because Tampa is smaller than Miami, but still there are more lead poisonings there. And so in this report, it had mentioned that one of the factors leading to the high rate of lead poisoning in Hillsborough was due to battery recycler. And there's a couple facilities that handle batteries in some way or another and recycling them. But as we started digging into it, we found this lead smelter, which is actually the only lead smelter in all of Florida, and it was right in our own backyard.
And maybe you can talk a little bit about what that process entails and just how rare. I mean, when we're talking about lead poisoning, you mentioned schools and you said these were adult cases. It's pretty rare. I mean, when we talk about lead poisoning, it's usually something that's focused on children, right?
Correct. It's something that we don't talk about a lot in adults, partially because we're not always testing adults for this, for lead poisoning. One of the largest sources of results for blood lead levels is coming from Medicaid, and it's for children on Medicaid. But then you also get some work environments like this factory that are also required to do blood lead tests. And so that's how a lot of these blood lead cases were getting reported into that morbidity statistics report that we started from.
Once you have this, report from a source, you've identified what sort of businesses might be involved in this process. How do you go about telling the story after that?
So it took us about 2 years from start until we actually published the first part of the story. So over that 2 years, there was a lot of effort in finding current and former workers who would talk to us and would tell us about what was going on there. And through those people, we would meet other people and sort of build these relationships with people that knew what was going on inside. And then they were also able to get access to the data because this company is a private company. So we couldn't make a public records request against it. And that's how, as a journalist, that's how I get a lot of my records. But that wasn't an option here. And so Corey largely took the lead on this, but he found workers who were willing to go in and request the data from the company because under the OSHA record-keeping statutes, the company had to release that information to employees that requested it.
How do you, you mentioned you had to sort of find people, and I understand there was like a former plant manager whose son had had lead poisoning. Can you talk about the process of building trust with sources, I guess, to get them to share their stories with you?
I find personally the key thing is to find something that you can connect with a source. So for some of them, that might be like a pet, you know, they have a dog and you like dogs. Or in the case of one of the workers, they had a hairless cat that was really cool. And we sort of bonded over that. To find the employees, it was, we started by looking for employees, former employees that had left the company and had filed a complaint with OSHA because those were public. And we went and spoke to those people, and then we asked them if they had other people they knew that we could speak to. And that's how we found this this one gentleman, Ko, who played a pretty big role in the story. And if you'd like, I can tell the story about how we met Ko.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. The three of us had piled into the car. This was late summer in Tampa, and we piled in the car and we drove about 45 minutes outside of Tampa to a subdivision. It looked like, fairly new, nice homes, big homes. And we weren't certain that we were at the right place, but we went out and we knocked on the door and a woman answered, and we were looking for a man. This man was a former manager of the furnace, and we had been told from other employees that he was very concerned with the lead because his child had an elevated blood lead level and they believed it came from the plant. And so we showed up at this house and we knocked on the door and this woman answered us. And we introduced ourselves. You know, we're Corey, Rebecca, and Eli from the Tampa Bay Times. And we're looking into this lead smelter. And immediately, as soon as we mentioned the company, she began to cry, tears streaming down her face.
Wow.
And she invited us in, and she showed us on her counter where a stack of medical records. And in that was all of her son's doctor's appointments and checkups and all of his blood lead results and all of his other tests. And it really struck us then that she hadn't pulled these medical records out because she expected us to show up and she wanted to show us. It was because this was part of her everyday life dealing with this stuff. It was always on the top of her mind because her son is autistic and also had a high lead level, which can contribute and exacerbate issues. And so it was at that moment where we all sort of felt the gravity of the story and realized the real human connection underneath what was going on.
Oh, that's amazing. And I imagine that sort of experience is replicated as you build other sources. So you do the work, you spend 2 years, you build a database that has all these PDFs to analyze this data you were able to get. Once it's published, what happens next? Were there changes, investigations that came out of it?
Mm-hmm. Pretty soon after we published, local congressmen and representatives called for investigations from both OSHA and the EPA. So OSHA sort of regulates what goes on inside the building, and then the EPA is in charge of what goes on outside the building. So OSHA, and it was a local sort of branch of the EPA, or you can think of it as like a local version of the EPA. It was called the EPC. OSHA and the EPC both opened investigations into the factory within weeks of our story, our first two stories coming out. When they finished their investigations, they had confirmed a bunch of the violations that we had outlined in our story.
And where are things today? Is the plant still running? Are employees still working there? Are there additional protections?
Yeah, so the plant does still operate. As a result of those two investigations, about 800,000, a little over 800,000 in fines has been levied against the company. They're currently going through sort of a legal phase, debating over, you know, what they actually are going to pay. But the company, the factory still runs and still produces, and workers have told us that they have been making improvements and making fixes on the inside. And OSHA and the EPC are supposed to also be keeping an eye on that going forward.
Has the company acknowledged, so would you say, wrongdoing, or maybe that's too strong a word, but that there's a problem?
No, I don't think they have, really.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, so this report comes out. There's investigations. Ultimately, the newspaper, I think this is how it works, submits it into the Pulitzer competition. Take us back to the moment that you and your colleagues learned that you had won. What was that like?
Well, we were all gathered up in the newsroom in Tampa, and I mostly work out of the St. Pete newsroom, so it was already a little weird for me to be over in the Tampa newsroom.
As a former bureau person myself, I understand that.
Yeah, but it was great. All of our Times colleagues were there, and we all gathered around the TV and got to watch the announcement be made and then celebrate. And then afterward, we all went back to the Poynter Institute, which is the parent company I spoke about earlier, for a short celebration, some cake and some champagne.
Nice. So can you talk a little bit just more about, I mean, it's, what does it say that, you know, aside from a handful of international news brands, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, that, I mean, this kind of reporting, is it really going to depend on nonprofits, wealthy benefactors into the future?
That's a fantastic question. I don't know that I have the answer, per se, but I do know that the structure has given us at the Times a lot of power to go after the important stories and not be beholden to advertising or revenue streams before stories in journalism. And so I think that is sort of a great incentive that comes about when you've got a partnership or a company that's owned by a media institute like Poynter.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we here in Illinois have seen a lot of out-of-town corporate ownership just really tear apart newsrooms. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's, you know, some cities where, well, papers have shut entirely, and even the bigger cities in downstate Illinois have had their newsrooms just slashed and slashed. So I'm glad Poynter is doing that. I hope other institutions can find that similar model. Let me end by asking you, since you're back at the university, since graduating 7 years ago, what advice would you have for young people now who have an interest in journalism or coding or both, or I don't know, what advice would you give to your younger self?
I would tell my younger self to not worry so much about looking stupid, especially in front of sources, because that's the whole reason that you're talking to sources, because they know more than you. So don't be afraid to ask stupid questions. Don't get caught up on your ego. And make sure that you really understand what the sources are telling you.
I love that, the sort of Columbo approach to journalism. You may be too young to know Columbo, but he was a detective who kind of played dumber than he really was to get answers from people. All right. Well, as a reminder, Eli Murray will participate in a Q&A session at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign tonight, Tuesday, with his former journalism professor, Stretch Ledford, Charles Stretch Ledford. That's 6 to 7 p.m. Tuesday evening. You can attend via Zoom or in person if you're in Urbana at the Monsanto Multimedia Studio there. We'll have additional details on our website at 21stshow.org. Eli Murray, thank you so much, and congratulations on the Pulitzer Prize.
Thank you, Brian.
Eli Murray is an alum of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and he presently is an investigative reporter at the Tampa Bay Times, where he and his colleagues Corey Johnson and Rebecca Woolington this year won a Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting. And that's all the time we have for our program today. You can visit our website, 21stshow.org, and while there, find links to our podcast, our Twitter page, every other way to connect with us. You can send us an email. talk@21stshow.org is the address. The 21st Show is produced by Jose Zepeda, Christine Hatfield, and Aiden Choate. Our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.